Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. By the Alchemist Brewery, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By Fairpoint Communications, small businesses make it big with Fairpoint. By Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to promote clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. And by National Life Insurance, for more than 150 years working for a better tomorrow, as well as over 750 VBSR members. Here's David Goodman.
Welcome to this week's Vermont Conversation. This week we're broadcasting live from the Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility 25th Annual Spring Conference, which is taking place at the UVM Davis Center. We're joined this week by three women who deal with different aspects of business and are involved with VBSR at this conference. They're all presenting on different panels, and it gives you a sense of the kind of things that go on at this conference, which seems to be, if I were to guesstimate, probably 500 or so people who are here from different parts of the state. But the people who are joining us this week, later in the show, we'll have Rachel Jolly from Vermont Works for Women, Sarah Newmark from New Chapter, and to start, we're joined by Marky Reed, who is the president of Career Networks. She is a leadership consultant and also does individual professional development, been in business for about 25 years. Marky Reed, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Well, hello, thank you.
So part of what you do is you help people make changes in their lives, particularly around workplace issues. How does this work? Somebody comes into you and they know they want to make a change, but they don't know how or in what direction. What do you tell them?
Well, we first start, David, with looking at what was the event that occurred that had them want to make the change. I would say one of the more common things that people report is they've got a new manager or their job changed in some significant way, and somehow who they are is no longer fitting what they really want to be doing. And so we look at how to identify what's the pieces they want to take forward and what are the pieces they want to let go of. And then we look forward at what's going to be a good fit for them, both in terms of the duties and responsibilities of what they'll be doing, and the tasks and responsibilities, as well as the environments they want to be in, and the kind of structure and people that they want to be serving. So that all of those things combined help them find that way through the morass.
What are some of the reasons that in your experience, why do they want to leave their jobs? Why do they want to do something different? And what brings them to you?
Oh, my gosh, so many things. People, sometimes they come because they have found that they're not feeling that they're being compensated well enough. And even though many reports say that compensation is not what motivates people, usually what happens is that something else has changed significantly enough that the compensation that they receive no longer justify working for whatever compromised compensation they think that they're getting. The other big piece is that there's some conflict at work. It's just that they can't seem to overcome the situation. There's a relationship with their manager or a coworker that just keeps eating at them, and they want to move away from that. They won't always say it's about a person, but when I really get down to it, it often is about a relationship. Well, I often start with helping people identify their personality style. So one of the ways that we do that is with the Myers-Briggs type indicator, and there's many other methods to do that. So So I help them understand what their natural style is so they can start to identify why where they were didn't work, didn't fit them anymore, and it helps them be more clear about what their next place will be so they get a clearer criteria for what they're looking for, and they're smarter about the choices they make for going further in their professional choices. So personality styles is looking at, Myers-Briggs is the assessment tool to help people understand their personality styles. And so psychological type has 16 different particular types of people. And what I'd like to say is it's 16 definitions of normal. There's pretty wide definitions of normal within each one of those. But there's really 16 different kind of primary patterns of how people interact with information and make decisions and how they want their environment to be. And so
let me just jump in. So talk about yourself. What does Myers-Briggs tell you about the type of person that you are?
Well, it helped me understand that one of the reasons why I was dissatisfied in a lot of the jobs I had is that it didn't have some of the deeper connections with people that I really wanted and being able to really make a difference in their in the individual lives. My first career is I was a journalist, actually, and so I found that it was interesting to listen to people's stories, and I enjoyed helping people tell their stories, but I wanted to do a little bit more with their lives. I wanted to help them more with their lives, and oftentimes I couldn't do that as in a news or reporting role. So then I tried other kinds of things. I went into marketing and public relations, and those didn't really give me what I was looking for in terms of the depth that I wanted. And I kind of stumbled into this career. I started writing resumes for people because I had the skills. And then I found out that I really liked working with people about their lives. And the area of career and employment seemed to be a real easy entry for me to work with people about their lives.
We are back on the Vermont Conversation. We had a little technical difficulty there. We lost our mic. So we are talking this week live from the VVSR annual conference at the UVM Davis Center. And we're talking with Marky Reed, who's the president of Career Networks. So Marky, earlier this morning I attended a workshop you gave on leadership styles. What are you described in that workshop? Four different leadership styles. What are they?
The quick and dirty is one is people who call the efficient structure type, and they like to create a clearly defined, a logical agenda and announce that and move forward. The second is called the empathetic harmony leader, and they are people who also have agendas, but it's based on the dynamics of the group and the people involved. So they create an agenda that will help them create harmony. Third is people who are called precise systems leaders, and they are people who like to explore lots of different options and potential ways of doing something and then find their way through it as a series of problem solving. And the fourth is called the personal authenticity, and those folks often are the least likely to see themselves as leaders, but they will lead from their passions, and oftentimes they start great huge movements in our world based on their deep burning passions. They lead much more in a flat organization and through consensus than through direction. So that's kind of the quick summary.
Are there some leadership styles that you think work better for working in groups?
Well, I think what I've come to see about leadership is that certain groups and organizations, they need, there's a call for certain kinds of leaders during different phases of their development. So there isn't necessarily one person who does it well, better than others, but sometimes there's it's the right person at the right time. And many times after some time has passed, that individual realizes that they're not being as effective as they'd like to be, and they will find another situation that's similar. There's a similar phase of development that the new group they go to is needing that kind of leadership style. Some leaders are able to develop with that, and what they do is they build a very strong team around them. No leader can lead through all phases of an organization or a group's changes through everything, because different styles are needed at different times. So building that team around you and leaning into the strengths of those team members can make all the difference for any leader.
So one of the things that you get called in to do is to troubleshoot groups that don't work. And a lot of people who are listening are in any number of different kinds of groups, be they at work or on local boards. What do you see when you come in cold to a group? What are some of the things that you look for?
Well, I almost always start with some kind of lens through the personality style. So whether it's just looking at the four leadership styles that I just described or doing the more full, complete 16 styles, and immediately then I can see some of the natural dynamics and tension points. I've often been informed a bit about what are some of the places that the group is experiencing some difficulty. So I'm not going in completely blind. But then the patterns show up more clearly. And at that point, I'm either able to work with people individually or I'm able to say some things in the context of the group that allow people to identify that maybe that one of those places that they need to shift or change is themselves. And I can say that because I'm not from the outside of the organization, I can often say things that somebody in the organization would never get away with saying because it would be politically dangerous for them to say. So I can sometimes come in and be an outside observer and point out what's actually, to me, quite obvious when I see the group dynamics. But when people are inside the group, they often either don't see it or don't want to say it because it might be dangerous to say it.
What if you come into a group and it's just really obvious there is just a toxic character there who is constantly stirring things up? And I think for a lot of people this will, you know, probably be a familiar scene. And what do you do about that?
Well, it's pretty rare that I find someone who I would consider truly toxic. It's often the situation they're in. It's very often they're in a role that's really ill-fitted for them. So they're agitated and then they become agitating to other people. And that creates a toxicity in the group dynamics, but it's not necessarily the individual that has ill intent or wakes up in the morning thinking, how can I really screw with people today? Hardly anybody really does that. I do believe there are probably a few people on the planet that enjoy that, but oftentimes it's really just that there's something they need to be heard or a way that they need to express themselves, and it's consistently being thwarted in their organization or in their role. And so that energy needs to be expressed somehow, and often gets expressed in that irritating way to the group.
So how do you fix that group?
I don't really fix the group so much as I open up a conversation with the members of the group, and again working with people individually and as a group. It usually becomes fairly clear that to the individual themselves, they often self-identify that they need to move away from that organization or that department or that role. It's not always just moving away from the team and leaving, but they sometimes can just shift their role and suddenly things change. So I'll give you a quick example. I work with this fellow who was sent to me for anger management. And he was really fabulous. He was this great guy, and he had a really strong Rhode Island accent. So he said, I just sound angry and pissed off because I'm from Rhode Island. Which was first of all, and then he had been highly successful in his job, like incredibly successful. He moved into a new position. His organization had been bought out by a larger organization, and he was put into a very administrative kind of task-oriented job. Whereas before he was all about the new business development and new territory development. So he was unsettled and unsatisfied in what he did. And so his energy for all the new things that he liked to create was being expressed as sounded like complaints to his manager. And so his manager said, you need anger management counseling. He didn't need anger management counseling. What happened coincidentally in the middle of our work is he got a new job assignment, and all of a sudden he wasn't an angry guy anymore. It's because his job assignment actually really fit who he was. He's the most beautiful example of someone who just was in a bad position and was called angry.
I'm having a hard time picturing you as the Jack Nicholson character in Anger Management, but I guess you wear a lot of hats.
I wear a lot of hats, and it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy working with people and helping them untangle all of the entanglements that they get themselves into.
What do you enjoy most about your work?
I really enjoy seeing how people can self-identify areas that they can make some improvements on and taking some actions on those. And often they're very small actions in the beginning, but I just at this conference I've run into at least a dozen people who I've worked with years ago, and they said, look at me now and this is what's happening. They've given me some great report, and a huge change has happened. Sometimes it's 3 years, sometimes it's 15 years, but it's been really wonderful to see how people can evolve over time.
Well, Marky Reed, thanks so much for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks so much. It was lots of fun, David.
Marky Reed is the president of Career Network. She's here at the VBSR 25th Annual Conference. She's been presenting about leadership styles and other workshops as well. We're also joined today by Sarah Newmark, who is with New Chapter in Southern Vermont and is also the board chair of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. Sarah, welcome back to the Vermont Conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about New Chapter.
We are a herbal and vitamin supplement company located in Brattleboro, Vermont. We've been there for, I think, almost 34 years now, and we have over 250 employees in the Brattleboro community, and we are an organic company, a non-GMO project verified company, and a B Corp.
Being a business in Vermont that is located on the southern tip, the tropics there, does that present any challenges?
The tropics of southern Vermont, I think it's hilarious. A lot of people this winter would laugh at that. But, yeah, it's being part of VBSR and the chair of the board, I mean, a lot of our focus is in northern Vermont. It makes sense. It's where the most population is. The majority of our business partners are located up here in northern Vermont. But I often want to tell people not to forget about what's happening down south. And so it does make it a little bit more challenging. I woke up at 4 a.m. to drive here. It happens a lot when we go up to Montpelier and we do work with other businesses in the state. This is a very northern-centric business community. However, there's a lot of great work happening in southern Vermont. There's a revival of our local downtown after we had a major fire a couple years ago, and great businesses are coming in. The community college and Vermont Tech moved in back to downtown, so we've really seen a revitalization of our community in Brattleboro. So it's a really exciting time for us in southern Vermont, and it's a great place to do business.
How many people does New Chapter employ?
We have 250 people in Brattleboro, and then another about 75 as our direct sales representatives in the field across the United States.
And you mentioned that you were a B Corp. Explain what that means for New Chapter.
For us at New Chapter, we've always been a mission-driven company. We, we're an organic, non-GMO project verified company. The environment and the people that work with us and for us have been a part of our reason for doing business since the beginning, and in addition to providing health and healing products, it's about, the whole ecosystem of our business. And B Corp really offered us an opportunity to memorialize that, to give us metrics to continue to work towards, and to have a third party come in and evaluate where we are to make sure, yes, you're really doing what you're saying you're doing, and here's some areas of improvement, and here's some areas where you've seen great success.
Explain what a B Corp or Benefit Corp is.
Sure. So a certified B Corp is a company that has been gone through an evaluation by a nonprofit B Lab, which runs this certification program, which looks at a company's sort of like their triple bottom line approaches to business. So everything from corporate governance to environment to community and social work that a company may do, and evaluates them on a 200-point scale. And any company that has an 80 a score of 80 or above has the opportunity to become certified. In addition to that, a company has to go through and change their corporate legal status to any. From in our situation, we were a C Corp, incorporated in the state of Delaware. We would move to a a certified B corp, a benefit corporation, a B corporation in the state of Delaware. So you both have to, in our case, if you bear the B circle on your product, you have to be both certified by the nonprofit and change your corporate status.
So what made you decide to be chair of the board of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility? I imagine this adds a lot of commuting time and meeting time to your life, and you have a young child.
It was a really interesting, the timing was interesting. I think 8 months pregnant. My husband thought I was crazy. I love VBSR. We've been members for, I think, 10 years, and I've been on the board, I think, for about 4 or 5 years now, and I love what VBSR stands for in our state and how important it is to have VBSR as a representative of a company like mine in the state of Vermont. And so I'm really proud of the work that we do. It is an interesting time in my life. I have a one-year-old now, and I work in Brattleboro, so there's a lot of commuting, although you can do a lot these days from home, and you don't have to drive all over as you once did. And I have a lot of support from my board. We have an exec board that we basically use as a place for all of us to come together to discuss and figure out leading VBSR forward. So it's not me as an executive director. As a chair of the board, it's me as a partner and on our board to lead us and make decisions. So I certainly have support and backup for this, really great organization that we're representing.
So this is the 25th anniversary of VBSR. What are the challenges that this group faces now in a, somewhat mature stage of its life?
Well, it's really interesting. We talk about that a lot because when you look at our history and our accomplishments, we've been working on these issues before they were popular, marriage equality, non-GMO. These are issues that VBSR has taken on from the very beginning. And now that we've seen them come to light and being embraced by the larger Vermont community and legislature, we're at a very important part of our existence as we have credibility. People look to us as the defining as defining what it means to be a socially responsible business in this state. And so as a board, we're really spending our time saying, what's next? Like, what are the real issues facing Vermont businesses, and how do we move that needle forward? And that's our big work right now.
So what is that work in progress? What is next?
Well, I think equality is something that we talk a lot about, and how we make sure that, we have fair pay and fair working environments for people in this state. I think that that's a big thing that we value and we like to see move forward. And we're also still waiting to see. We really want to engage our base and engage people and members of the community to let us know what issues they see facing them, so we can put together and be a representative voice of the business community here.
And what does it mean to be a socially responsible business and to be a member of a group like this?
That's a great question. I think it means many different things to many businesses. I think at its core, when I think about in my job holding the social responsibility mission for our company, I like to look at our supply chain and every member of that value chain and making sure that they're being taken care of, and that we're not focusing just on one financial return. We're looking at making sure the farmer who grows turmeric in India, to the extractor, to the person who, takes our products and puts them on pallets to get them out to our retailers and our consumers, are all part of a well-cared-for, holistic system that looks after one another. And so for me, the definition is of a socially responsible business is someone that cares about all the people in their supply chain and value chain.
Has it changed over time what the notion of a socially responsible business is?
Sure. I mean, as a 34-year-old company, we never said those words. It was just we're a company that's committed to doing good, providing good products that cared for our environment. I think now that there's more tools in how you evaluate it, so there's much more resources out there for people who are starting a business or looking to change their business to be more socially responsible, to understand what that means. So it's changed in the fact that I think a lot of people have put a lot of work in to help define what that means to be socially responsible. And it's also the same in that I think all of us have the same goal, which is we're just trying to make the world a little bit of a better place by the businesses that we're in. And so I think the intention is the same. I think the tools have just changed.
Okay, we're talking with Sarah Newmark from New Chapter. She's also the board chair of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. We'll be back in a few minutes after the news.
This is Dave Jones of Allen Jones & Sons. With all the tire stores in central Vermont, why would you drive over to Air Street in Barrie? We believe there are a lot of reasons. Number one, 30 years of fair and honest service. That's right, the Joneses have been selling and servicing tires for 30 years. Number two, personal service from a family-owned business. Something you can't get anywhere else. Number three, a great line of products by Bridgestone, Firestone, Dayton, and Nokian. Call Dave or Steve Jones, Allen Jones & Sons, Barrie, for a lot of good reasons.
Circus, comedy, music, and mayhem this Saturday, May 16th with Vermont Vaudeville at the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center in Stowe. Vermont Vaudeville brings an age-old art form to the modern stage, including live music, big stunts, and physical comedy that people of all ages will enjoy. Family four-pack tickets are available. Vermont Vaudeville in Stowe. Saturday, May 16th. Visit sprucepeakarts.org.
Carlotta Bradley. Survivors tell their stories about last night's deadly Amtrak train derailment in Philadelphia. Passenger Jeffrey Cutler says the train seemed to just fly off the tracks as it rounded a curve.
To me, it felt like it was taking off. It was like it left, it went into the air, went around the curve. The speed around the curve sort of pushed the train off the tracks.
As always, investigators are looking at speed as a possible factor. Meanwhile, the death toll has risen to 7, and thousands of travelers have had to make new plans today in the Northeast. Bill Atkins in New York says he went to Penn Station this morning, planning to catch a train home to Virginia without realizing what had happened.
But yeah, I'm just sitting here, standing here in a daze, trying to figure out what to do. Because I didn't wake up until this morning and see it on the news.
The derailment cut off service on the busiest rail route in North America. AP Update, I'm Carlotta Bradley.
Next Sunday, Thunder Road and Mechelson RV present a Memorial Day Classic doubleheader. Thunder Road ACT late models will race the Classic for 100 laps, and the Pro All-Stars, including Turner Main's 2015 three-time winner Mike Rowe, along with Ben Rowe, Cassius Clark, and DJ Shaw, lead a strong contingent of super late model teams for their first appearance at the nation's site of excitement. It's the most anticipated race in recent years at Thunder Road next Sunday. The two most popular late model divisions in the Northeast. ACT late models and past super late models at the same track. Super late model racing like Crouch, McCabe, and Cabana return to the toughest short track in America Sunday of Memorial Day weekend. Derek O'Donnell and Nick Sweet begin their late model chase for the championship. ACT stars Pohl, Hoare, and Helliwell jump to the pass side to take on DJ Shaw, the Rose, and Clarks. Spend your Memorial Day weekend Sunday, May 24th at Thunder Road for the Mechelson RV Memorial Day Classic. Don't miss it.
Potholes. If you live in Vermont, you know how big they can be and the damage they can cause. This year was especially bad, but Jack Castellaneta and the service pros at Formula Nissan have the solution for your pothole problems.
If your car or truck is out of alignment because you hit a pothole, it can wear down your tires and ruin that great gas mileage. So we've made arrangements for a special offer on a four-wheel alignment, just $49.95.
Jack, that's any make, any model, a four-wheel alignment for $49.95?
Absolutely. If you're pulling to the left or pulling to the right, it's probably that big pothole you hit this winter. Let our factory trained technicians put things straight and keep your car running true.
$49.95 for a four-wheel alignment from some of the best factory trained technicians in the Northeast. It's going on right now at Formula Nissan.
Any make, any model. Bring it to Formula Nissan for a four-wheel alignment, just $49.95. We're on the Barry Montpelier Road next to Pizza Hut and at FormulaNissan.com. Let us show you how easy it is to do business here.
Parts not included.
Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is pleased to provide David Goodman's Vermont Conversations with underwriting from National Life Insurance, Fairpoint Communications, by Let's Grow Kids, The Alchemist Brewery, the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, and Green Mountain Power, as well as over 750 VBSR members.
Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. We're broadcasting live this week from the VBSR 25th Anniversary Conference. It's taking place at the UVM Davis Center. We're joined this half hour by two women who are presenting different workshops and talks over the course of this day, where there's several hundred people attending from around the state. We're joined by Rachel Jolly, who is with Vermont Works for Women. Rachel, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you very much.
Tell us what Vermont Works for Women does.
So we're a 27-year-old nonprofit that's based in Winooski and Barrie, and we serve about 1,200 women and girls a year all throughout the state. Our mission is to help women and girls recognize their potential and also, importantly, move towards economic independence. So we do a variety of different programs that not only educate and expose young women and older women to the variety of potential career opportunities out there, but also give them the training that they might need to get there.
So what are some of those programs that you do?
We like to think about our programs, because we offer about 20 programs, we won't list them off, but we do offer them in three main branches of programming. Our girls' programs mainly lie in the education and exposure realm. So we work with middle schoolers and high schoolers to let them know about the big wide world of work out there, talk about what their courage and leadership and confidence issues are. What we do introduce issues of media literacy, what they're hearing from in the media or from their friends and family about what girls are supposed to do and maybe how that might contrast with what they want to do and what they can do. We have a high school conference for about 500 high school girls from all over the state to get their hands wet, sometimes literally, with lots of hands-on activities of non-traditional career fields for women. So fields where women make up 25% or less of the workforce. And then there's another branch of our programming is in that non-traditional career training. So we have a variety of programs that are training women to enter fields where women are the minority. Things like corrections and policing, IT, welding, electrical, plumbing, carpentry, manufacturing, things like that. And then we also have a branch of programming that works with women who are making a transition out of incarceration or off of state assistance and might have other significant barriers besides their mindset of what's possible, but also literal things like a criminal record or a lack of a vehicle or a driver's license or a lack of any employment experience that is preventing them from going farther in the work world.
What are some of the challenges that women face, particularly going into these non-traditional fields or non-traditional for women fields?
I would say a primary one is confidence. Even though it sometimes ends like it's talked about as a kind of a touchy-feely thing, quantity, it really can be a significant barrier to somebody who has a dream to do something but really either doesn't know where to start or is very intimidated about getting in. Being a minority, any kind of minority, a gender, a racial, ethnic minority in a field, in an office setting or anywhere else, can be intimidating, and that can stop somebody from going any further, from either, you know, just putting their application into a job. Even knowing the rules, the hidden rules sometimes of a workplace, what to dress, what to wear, what to say, the way someone even applies sometimes is different and not as apparent as you might think. And also, besides the confidence, sometimes there's significant barriers about shift work or working on holidays or at a training. For instance, with the police academy, there's a four-month training. It's 16 weeks. For a single parent, that can be extremely daunting, if not impossible. And so there's literal barriers, and sometimes there's more emotional barriers or psychological barriers. We try and work with women to address those all.
So talk about what you find working with middle-age school girls as you try and introduce them to fields that they just may never have thought of going into themselves before. What kind of responses do you get?
So middle school is a great time to intervene, to make an intervention. I think we've found again and again that at the elementary school level, you pretty much see equality in terms of the girls and boys showing interest in a variety of fields. The STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math, get equal representation or interest from boys and girls in the earlier years. That tends to take a nosedive at around the middle school age when girls tend to be more focused on fitting in, to being looked at positively by their peers and doing maybe sometimes not appearing too smart. And so we see a nosedive then, and we want to, encouragement and exposure are really two of the primary things that that even some scientific studies have found. Google did a white paper on what either encourages or prevents women from pursuing computer science technology degrees or careers, and encouragement and exposure were two of the top factors. And so definitely that's one of the things all our programs do, is just say it is possible and you can do it. And if you have an interest and a passion, that's generally a great start, and that's what you need. The family needs to hear that as well, the friends, the teachers, the environment, the culture really takes a big part in terms of that encouragement and exposure, because they need to hear it from all around that they can do it. And that's where the confidence starts. Confidence starts even younger. But certainly at the middle school and high school levels, when they're starting to take the classes or not, if they're opting out of them, they might be shutting some doors before, you know, prematurely.
Vermont Works for Women, we're talking with Rachel Jolly from Vermont Works for Women here at the VBSR annual conference. You run a camp, Rosie's Girls. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Rosie's Girls is one of our signature camps. It's actually run all across the country. Vermont Works for Women runs two of the camps in Barrie and in Essex, but it's been replicated across the country. And it's for middle school girls, 6th to 8th grade girls, who are interested in the trades. It's a trades exploration camp, as in carpentry is its primary trade. We do a little bit of welding. They're hearing from engineers. They're getting their hands dirty with bike repair, auto repair. They're learning about bridge building. They're learning about all different kinds of careers, but trades exploration is one of the primary things, as well as some of the things I talked about before, such as media literacy, talking about body image. One of the things that we're known for is having a rule about no body talk. We're just for the 3 weeks. We're inviting girls to experiment with not giving other girls any kind of feedback about their visual appearance, positive or negative, not even saying, that's a great shirt or I like your haircut. Just to see, try that on and see how it feels, to focus more than on what kind of competencies and skills and strengths that the girls bring to the camp, and try and focus on that and about what we appreciate about one another. So that's our Rosie's Girls camp. And we also have a 1 week Dirt Divas camp, which focuses on courage and leadership and confidence through mountain biking. It uses mountain biking as the medium. That's run in 7 different locations throughout the state, and it's also for the same age group, 6th to 8th grade girls.
What are some of the challenges? You mentioned that Vermont Works for Women works with previously incarcerated women. What are some of the challenges that women face coming out of the correction system?
They're significant. I think it's important to pay attention to how women end up in incarceration, and because one of the ways that women are a little different than men is one of the primary pathways to incarceration is experiencing chronic trauma from early childhood on, or even in utero sometimes. So chronic trauma is neglect or abuse that's ongoing. It's not just it could be a car accident. That would be a kind of trauma. That's not chronic trauma. Trauma that goes on and on, and so somebody is being given messages maybe again and again that they're not worthy, they're not worthwhile, they have nothing to offer, and they're, you know, physically devalued sometimes. And so that is a major pathway to incarceration for women. It's been varied that 60 to 90% of women who are in prison have experienced chronic trauma in their lives. So that's important to consider because it affects brain biology. We've heard from some people from Let's Grow Kids at the conference today about this critical time period for brain development between 0 and 5, where actual neurons the brain pathways are connecting. And if there is neglect and abuse during that time, it's all the more dangerous for later development and executive function skills that are impaired. So women are facing some of those challenges in terms of needing to work on those executive function skills, maybe more than your average adult, but also other barriers such as social bias against somebody who has a criminal record. Vermont was just getting some publicity for the governor supporting the Ban the Box legislation that would encourage employers to at least strike that question from their application about a criminal record until the person at least has an interview, because I think we're ruling some people out needlessly just based on maybe a mistake that was made years prior. There's oftentimes a lack of money. Certainly, the majority of women who are in prison do lack significant financial resources. It's safe to say that many are from generational poverty. And so just getting reestablished on their feet, sometimes housing is their primary barrier. And many men and women are still in prison even though they've reached their minimum or maximum sentence because of a lack of housing, a lack of a vehicle, a lack of access to a vehicle, sometimes a valid driver's license. There's many, many barriers we could list off, but those are some of the primary ones.
You're about to lead a workshop on inclusivity. What is your message there to business owners from your perspective at Vermont Works for Women?
I think that one of the most important things to recognize, especially at a conference like VBSR, where employers are trying to do the right thing and know that diversity generally, if we look at the natural world around us, diversity, it's safe to say, is always a good thing. We could say the same thing about our organizations and our companies. Diversity generally makes a company stronger and healthier and more financially viable. And so if we're looking at various ways to attract diversity, there's a lot of things that employers can do prior to the recruitment phase of their company. They can start looking inward in terms of how welcoming and inclusive is our current staff, or is our office environment, is this handicapped accessible, obviously, or are we welcoming to folks whose English might not be their first language. For folks who might not have a college education, can we look at our job descriptions to see, is a bachelor's degree really essential for this job, or is it just preferred and that's more of the norm that we're comfortable with? So we can question things like that. Also, in our recruitment practices, let's look at the images we're putting out there, and then are we including diverse faces, diverse genders, different visuals that might attract a new population than might be the norm or the dominant culture. And then look at our interview questions. What are we asking? Are we only looking for experience exactly in this sector that we happen to be hiring for, or are there other transferable skills that could be applied here as well? Things like that, I think, as well as once the person is hired, making sure that there's some cultural competency among the staff in terms of interacting with diverse people from different backgrounds.
How would you say Vermont is doing regarding women in the workplace issues around this?
Overall, we are a progressive state still. I think we have the reputation of at least being open-minded about things. We have a lot of employer interest that comes to Vermont Works for Women and says, I would like to diversify, I'm just having trouble. But I still think we fall around the national standards with a lot of our occupations as being in the minority. All the fields that I listed off before that in terms of what we offer training for definitely are minority women, and we fall right along there, those lines. The trades are generally between 1 and 3 to 5%. Law enforcement is around 10 to 12%, although we could point to specific agencies that are doing better than that. IT is between 10 and 25%, depending on what kinds of jobs you're looking at. Manufacturing as an industry is around 25%, although if you look at the occupational segregation within that, you're seeing that the women are generally in reception jobs or assembly jobs, not the higher tech jobs, but higher skill and higher paying jobs. So I think we still have a ways to go.
What's it going to take for Vermont to achieve the kind of equity that you would like to see?
It will take a village. It will take all of us. As with most things, we need to start talking to our young girls and our young boys about the possibilities, about what's possible for them, and to remind ourselves that occupations as well as clothes and toys are not gendered. Just because you are a girl or boy doesn't mean that means you're automatically interested or going to be good at certain jobs or interested in certain clothes or toys. I think that's the conversation can start there. We can take an interest in our schools in terms of making sure that in classrooms, the teachers, the posters on the wall are inviting to all. And then from the employer point of view, I think we can do a lot to go out of the status quo to start saying we want to be different, and therefore we have to do, you know, our practices have to be different to invite that diversity in.
Okay, Rachel Jolly, thanks for joining us on the Vermont Conversation this week.
Thank you very much.
Rachel Jolly is with Vermont Works for Women. We're going to come back to our conversation with Sarah Newmark from New Chapter. She's also the board chair of Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility, and we're broadcasting live this week from the UVM Davis Center for the 25th anniversary spring conference. Sarah, some of the issues that Rachel was raising have a direct bearing on you as somebody who is director of sustainability at a business that employs, you said, over 200 people. How do you get women or other folks to kind of go out of their comfort zones and do work that they might not have sort of pegged themselves as being, you know, the person for?
Well, it's interesting. I just had this conversation yesterday with some members of our HR team because as we're going through our next round of our B Corp assessment, a lot of the questions are focused around, you know, minority workers in your company and what positions they hold, which includes women. So it was a very interesting conversation you just had, and one that hits deeply with us because we're very focused on it. We have two areas of our company. One is a manufacturing center, and one is a corporate office. And both, I think, we do a great job at representing women in management positions. I think looking at the numbers yesterday, we're over 40% of our manager positions are occupied by women, which I think is a really impressive number, considering the amount of people we have in our offices. I think when you looked in our warehouse, you'll see positions, I think, not normally held by women in the production or even managing our facilities areas, which I'm really proud of. We struggle in the ethnic diversity section and sector, which I think a lot of us in Vermont do. Although we are starting to attract a lot of people outside of Vermont to move to Brattleboro, which is a lot harder than, let's say, attracting talent to Burlington. We're a much smaller city, but we're a fast-growing company, and I think people are really looking at us as an opportunity. And so we are getting people moving in, and that brings it more ethnic diversity than we've seen in the past.
So what have you found is the key to encouraging women to do jobs that they, you know, may not have grown up doing or even thought of themselves doing?
I think one of our policies that we really promote is hiring from within. So we have people that come in our customer service or customer relations department or as temps and kind of our entry-level positions, and then they look at the opportunities that exist when a new job opening comes. And so they may never have thought of themselves as a project manager, consumer relations manager, or anything in that. They may have thought they were just taking a job that was an entry-level job, and all of a sudden they see these role models and opportunities open up. And so by focusing on hiring from within, I think we really build people's confidence, as she was saying, to go out for jobs they may not have gone in the past.
How do you do regarding pay equity for women within the company?
We look at that every year, and we are, I don't know the national standards, but what I can say is that there is equitable pay across the board for our employees.
So what's the biggest challenge for you in terms of the kind of issues that we're hearing about, having people from, you know, marginalized communities, people formerly incarcerated, you know, any number of ethnic minorities? What do you find is the biggest challenge?
What we've seen, you know, on the ethnic minority piece, I mean, we don't ask the question of incarceration when we in our hiring process, and so we don't know how many people of our employees have been incarcerated. I can't speak to the issues they may face, you know, applying to work at a company like ours. However, on the ethnic side, you know, we have heard from members of our family at New Chapter that it's challenging to move to Vermont. We have a new CEO who is originally from India and has moved from Geneva, and his family grew up at a you know, a school that was ethnically diverse, and moving to Vermont is challenging for him and his family. And we've heard that over and over, that there's no restaurants that make me feel at home, or there's no community centers that focus around not just my ethnic group, but all ethnic groups together. And so I think that as a community in Vermont, we can do more to be more inclusive and open to celebrating other ethnicities. You know, I'm Jewish, and I came from a part of the country that had a lot bigger Jewish population, and I've worked hard to find my own population in southern Vermont. So I think we can do a lot by just celebrating all of our differences, and not even just differences of people that grew up in Vermont, but from all over the world. And I think that will do a lot to make people feel more comfortable moving and working here.
What about your own experience? You mentioned you have a one-year-old child. How has that changed or informed the way you approach the kind of workplace that you want your business, New Chapter, to be?
Well, it's changed everything for me. So every thought process I have has now been changed by my adorable little one-year-old. But I wish for her to be in a place where she never has to think about being a woman and though she can in the workplace and what any differences that may bring. I think I want her to celebrate her womanhood and her femininity and whatever she wants to, who she wants to be. But I never want her to feel, you know, anything but equal to anyone else in the work field. And so, yeah, that's what I do in my job. I want to leave this world a better place for her, and I feel very strongly in the power of business to be able to make change and make and do good in this world. And so what I do every day and what I feel good about coming home is that I'm creating a business that is helping to do that. I'm creating, you know, New Chapter puts out products that consumers can feel good about buying, and I want businesses to be transparent and to believe that they have the power to make change by consumer habits and the way we source and put out products.
Have you made any changes or recommended any changes based on your own experiences about what makes a business family friendly?
Oh, it's certainly at the top of my talking list now. I mean, I think that we as a country do not do a great job in supporting mothers and fathers in this really critical time as they have children. So, part of my work coming back after my maternity leave was talking to my company about a more progressive maternity and paternity leave policy. We have a great one, but is it enough? And are we doing enough to support mothers and fathers in this really critical moment in their family and build good community and future leaders? And so part of, you know, yes, well, I think that there's a lot to look at in companies about child care and subsidized child care and good progressive maternity and paternity leave to support our families in the fabric of our communities.
Okay, well, thank you, Sarah Newmark. Sarah Newmark is Director of Sustainability for New Chapter, which is located in Brattleboro, a maker of vitamin supplements and other things. Thanks for joining us this week on the Vermont Conversation.
Anytime.
And that does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. We wrap up our live broadcast from the VBSR 25th Annual Conference, which is taking place today at the UVM Davis Center. You can hear this and all Vermont Conversations at VermontConversation.com and tune in next Wednesday at 1 for the next Vermont Conversation.
You have been listening to Vermont Conversations with David Goodman, made possible by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility and its 750-plus members. Additional support is provided by National Life Insurance for over 150 years working for a better tomorrow. By Fairpoint Communications, small businesses make it big with Fairpoint. By the Alchemist Brewery, serving Greater Waterbury and Vermont since 2003. And Let's Grow Kids, focusing on the first years of child development. By the University of Vermont Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. And Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers to provide clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. Join us again next Wednesday at 1 o'clock for David Goodman's Vermont Conversations.
It's that time of the year again, and the Country Club of Barrie is gearing up for a great 2015 season. Before you know it, you'll be hitting straight drives and sinking long putts. Join now and maximize your spring and summer. There's a membership level to fit any budget. Golf is a great family activity, too. Kids under 14 play for free with a member. So get off the couch and get on the course. Country Club of Barrie, a course you'll never forget. See it at ccofbarrie.com.
Are you a flavor junkie? Do you have discerning tastes or just really opinionated taste buds? Well, if so, and you're 18 or older, the Keurig Green Mountain Sensory Test Center wants to hear from you. Join us at our facility in Waterbury Center for ongoing tasting sessions. And be the first to experience innovative foods, beverages, and other products before you see them in the grocery aisle. Tasting sessions happen every week and only take 30 to 45 minutes. Each time you visit, you'll receive rewards such as Amazon gift cards and Keurig.com discounts, plus incentives to shop and eat locally while you're in town. Who doesn't want the opportunity to have fun and get rewarded at the same time? All you have to do is tell us what you think. There's no experience necessary to participate. You just need to be 18 or older and love trying new things. Become a Keurig Green Mountain taste tester today and let your voice be heard. Give us a call at 882-2500 and don't forget to tell your friends.
We'll be checking out World and National News Update at 2 o'clock. We have the getaway taking us up until 2:50. Red Sox baseball from the Oakland Coliseum, the Oakland A's, and the Red Sox matched up. We'll give you the pregame and the game coming your way. After that, on locally owned and operated, 96.1 WDEV, FM and Warren, FM 96.5, Barry and AM 550, WDEV, Waterbury, Montpelier.
The death toll has climbed to 7 as investigators try to determine.